Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. And right now we've got a special conversation with Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller. Commissioner Miller, thank you so much for coming in.
It's good to be with you, Brandon.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We've got a primary election. You've got some primary opponents yourself. And so for folks who haven't paid attention perhaps to the race or don't know your background, let people know a little bit about who you are, your history, and why you decided to run for Agriculture Commissioner several years ago.
Well, I'm a two-term incumbent commissioner, running my third term. So I've been at this a while, had a little experience. I oversee a $6 billion agency, which that's larger budget than 31 governors. So it's a Texas-sized operation. Mm-hmm. So we've completely retooled the agency. We've got it running lean and efficient, outsourced everything we can to the private sector. So it's a much smaller agency in many terms than it was. The Sunset Commission, and people know what that is, they review state agencies to see if they still need to exist or make changes. We just went through that, and the Texas Sunset Commission, which is third-party verification, told us that the Texas Department of Agriculture was the best-run state agency they had ever reviewed. Mm-hmm. So I feel pretty confident that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing at the agency.
Because you served in the state legislature, what made you want to run for Agriculture Commissioner?
Well, actually, I was out of the legislature and decided that my political career was over, and I was recruited to run. Several farm groups asked me to run, several conservative groups, several legislators. And so finally, I gave in and prayed about it. And my wife and I talked about it and prayed about it and decided, well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So here I am, looking for my third term.
And what has surprised you since you've been in the office? Has there been anything that you didn't expect? Anything you've learned about the department?
Well, what surprised me is how bad the agency was in shape. The shape of the agency, it was just really upside down. I inherited an agency that had a $40 million budget, and we were $20 million in debt, short of revenue. So I had to address that. It was difficult times. I didn't know it was in that bad a shape when I took over, but we got that fixed and got everything adjusted, and we've got a lean machine running now.
Some of your opponents have criticized the agency for increasing ag fees. What's your response to that?
Well, we actually did increase some fees, and here's why. Prior to me taking over, the money to run the department, half came from the licenses we sell or the fees we collect, and the other half came from the taxpayers. So basically, the taxpayers were subsidizing up to 50% Bucky's, Walmart, HEB, farmers' pesticide license, whatever we did, the taxpayers were subsidizing it up to 50%. You know, I knew that it would be a political train wreck for me to change that. But as a conservative, I thought this is not right. These guys, you know, we can pay our own, they can pay their own way. So what we are now is called a cost recovery agency. We don't, other than grants that the legislature gives us to distribute, we don't cost the taxpayer one dime. And no longer are the taxpayers subsidizing, you know, Bucky's and HEB and Walmart. They pay their own way. They pay the full price themselves, and they can.
I think something here sometimes is people who live, especially in more urban areas and cities, wonder, well, why do I care about the Agriculture Commission, right? I don't live in a rural area. But of course, you know, the Agriculture Department sees a lot of stuff and does actually affect people who live in cities as well.
Well, here's why somebody living in big cities should be concerned who the state farm boss is, right? So I'm responsible for 5 million school meals each day. So I feed your kids, okay, through the school lunch program, school breakfast program. Matter of fact, we run 12 nutritional programs, summer feeding programs, elderly feeding programs. We keep area food banks supplied, meals on wheels, all of that kind of stuff. We make sure that your pets and children don't get poisoned by pesticides. We're the Consumer Protection Agency. We make sure you don't get ripped off. You know, when you checked out at a store today, they had a barcode scanner. We oversee those. We regulate every barcode scanner in the state, every scale in the state. Mm-hmm. When you check out at the deli counter or at the feed store, you weigh your luggage at the airport, mail houses, pharmacies, we make sure that, you know, you're not getting ripped off. So we do a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what about, what about when we look at the border? Okay, this is probably one of the biggest issues we hear about, right? Especially over the last year, where the border has been very porous. We've seen an influx and invasion of illegal aliens crossing the southern border. Some people say the Agriculture Department could potentially have a role in trying to curb those illegal crossings. What's your opinion?
Well, of course. Actually, when I was in the House, I chaired the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee. Mm-hmm. This was under Governor Rick Perry, and we had given up on the federal government ever securing our border. So Rick Perry launched Operation Rio Grande, which I was in charge of as a House chairman. Mm-hmm. So what I did as chairman is, first thing I did is reconstitute the Texas Navy, and we put gunboats on the Rio Grande. Mm-hmm. Okay, we consolidated all the state agencies. None of them could talk to each other. We got them all on the same frequency. The 1,200 miles of the river, I divided up into 200-mile sections, put a Texas Ranger in charge of each section. We brought all law enforcement together in a joint operations center, and we divided up duties, and we worked together. DPS, we supplied air assets. We put helicopters on the river. Mm-hmm. Of course, Border Patrol did the apprehensions. Parks and Wildlife were embedded in the brush, you know. And so we were successful. We didn't stop at 100%. We stopped illegal immigration 60%, and we stopped illegal drugs coming into Texas 60%. And because we did such a good job, the Obama administration mm-hmm. moved 60% of our Border Patrol agents out of Texas. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they decided they'd help us. So I do have some experience at that. Mm-hmm. As Ag Commissioner, we work with law enforcement down there. Of course, we do border inspections ourselves. Mm-hmm. I actually have four livestock export facilities on the border. And we work with authorities, you know, making sure that those transports of livestock back and forth from Mexico to Texas, you know, are square and straight and are not, mm-hmm. not helping the problem.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, especially in light of COVID and a lot of actions from the Biden administration, people have seen major inflation in food prices as well, right? You know, beef, eggs, you know, keep going. Do you think there's an end in sight to that?
I think so. We've got to get a handle. We've got to get, you know, a new administration, and the Biden administration is obviously a train wreck, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to the supply side mm-hmm. administration. You know, we had problems early on in COVID. I had to go from feeding those 5 million school meals in the cafeteria. The next day, I had to figure out how to feed those kids at home. Mm-hmm. I had to figure out how to keep. We also oversee rural health care. I had mm-hmm. to figure out how to keep. Rural hospitals open, keep them supplied because the supply chain was disrupted. Mm-hmm. So I opened up my warehouse. We worked with emergency management. I took my agriculture inspectors, made delivery truck drivers out of them. Mm-hmm. So we were taking PPE equipment all over rural Texas, masks, hand sanitizer, gowns, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We were able to draw down some federal funds to keep these rural hospitals open. So that's something that I've dealt with on a personal basis.
It's a pretty good segue because in response to COVID, you've been somewhat of a critic of shutdowns and closures and some of the executive mandates we've seen from the governor over the last couple of years. What would you have done differently?
Well, I'll tell you what I did do differently. Mm-hmm. When the governor shut down, businesses decided, well, you're essential and you're non-essential. A lot of those non-essential businesses were agriculture businesses. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm autonomous from the governor. I have full authority, executive authority over the agriculture code. So I issued an executive order that any business, any agriculture business, any agriculture-related business, any agriculture support business was essential, and you will stay open. And I issued a letter to that effect. It's still posted to this day on my website. So we were able to keep, you know, livestock auctions open, feed stores, but other things like Western stores. I mean, we got to have hats and gloves, and, mm-hmm. you know, we can't work it without that. Trailer manufacturers, I kept florists open. Gun shops and ammo dealers, mm-hmm. you know, they could use that letter. When we have to defend our livestock and our crops, you mm-hmm. know, against predators. So we were able to, even though the governor shut down a lot of business he thought was non-essential, we have to have these agriculture businesses to support us. We have to continue to feed people and clothe people. And so I was able to keep many of them open that would have otherwise been shut down.
Do you and the governor speak often at this point?
You know, it's odd you say that. I've tried numerous times to get a meeting with the governor in the 7 years that we've both been in this office, our offices. Never got a meeting with the governor. Never got a phone call returned. Never got an email or letter returned. Politico asked me, interviewed me and said, "What's it like working with Governor Abbott?" I said, "Well, it's kind of like working with Sasquatch. Everybody knows he's real, and there's some people have seen him, but I've never seen him. You know, I can't get a meeting with him. I wish I had a good answer why he doesn't communicate. It would make life a lot easier for Texas.
I was going to say, would that make the role, the job easier?
I think so. If we were all working together instead of separately and independently. I mean, I'm not a hard guy to get along with, but if you won't talk to me, it makes it hard to work with you.
Going back to your tenure again, you've been there for 7 years now. What are, if you want to list off maybe three big accomplishments you want folks to know about that y'all have accomplished in the department?
Well, I think that the first thing that's most important, we're still working on it, is I did away with all the mandates that the Ag Department put on our schools, our nutrition programs, just did away with them. We don't do mandates. We work voluntary with our schools. When I took over, they were serving zero local products. Everything was flash frozen, bought from Benny Keith or Cisco's, a lot of salt and dyes and stuff in it, and basically the kids wouldn't eat it. So I worked with those schools. We've set up a program to connect the schools with local farmers. And last year, our schools bought $65 million worth of local products and fed to our kids. No added salt, no preserved, never flash frozen. So we're going to continue to expand that. I think the next thing we've done is what we've done to the Go Texan program. We've expanded that program from 200 members to over 2,500. It was just a local marketing program. We expanded that nationwide. And I also have a global outreach initiative. So we're marketing Texas products all around the globe. We've been very successful at that. I have a full-time office in Argentina now. Central and South America has been huge for animal genetics. I've had to build a new livestock export facility in Del Rio to handle the volume. I also built one at the airport in Houston to handle our exports to Vietnam, Indonesia, Taiwan, the Middle East, and Europe. We're in negotiation to build another one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're just overwhelmed with all these exports, but we've got to have a way to get them there. So we're working on that. And our consumer protection division, we've really stepped that up, and consumers are no longer getting ripped off.
And yet, over the last several years, you've seen a few pushes that I can think of from the Texas legislature to try to claw away some of the responsibilities from the Department of Agriculture. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it's jealousy, but a lot of it's the lobby. You know, we were pretty, I guess the fuel stations, the convenience stores thought we were pretty hard on them when we went in and got the fuel pumps inspected every year. It was taking 12 years, and they only had 80% compliance. So one out of five times you pulled up the pump, you were getting ripped off. And then I put in a credit card skimmer program where I teach my inspectors how to open those pumps and look for those credit card skimmers. Of course, we exposed that and the bad actors. And, of course, they went to the legislature and got the lobbyists and got it taken away from me. And now the consumers have zero protection. They sent it to an agency that wrote one citation last year. And I've been waiting on them for 4 years to come up and pick up the calibration equipment to check the pumps, and they've never picked it up.
I'm interested in your perspective on this, having served in the legislature as well. You know, the Republican Party of Texas comes out with, you know, grassroots come out with a list of priorities. And session after session, you know, most of those things don't cross the finish line. Why do you think that is?
I think it's lack of leadership and lack of courage. And actually, we've got some very weak legislators. And y'all see this. I mean, y'all know who they are. They say, "Well, why don't you just stay in your lane and do cows, sows, and plows?" Well, no. I was there at the press conference. I was one holding the press conference on gender modification when the legislature would not prevent the gender mutilation of minors. They just wouldn't do it. Towards the end of the third special session, I was there at the press conference demanding the governor call a fourth special session to end vaccine mandates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm all over the place, you know. When Governor Abbott unconstitutionally extended early voting for a third week, I sued the governor. Mm-hmm. And when the governor put out his mandate that there would be no mask requirements on any state property, and the Senate decided, well, we're going to make you wear a mask to come in the Capitol and take a COVID test to get in, and you're going to stand outside for 30 minutes in January, February, March, I sued Dan Patrick and all 31 senators. I mean, it's somebody's got to stand up. They're just not doing their job. I shouldn't have to do that, Brandon. Mm-hmm. They should be doing their job.
Right.
And it was just a very weak session, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been among those calling for a forced special session, for vaccine mandates and for other issues as well. What do you think the hesitation is?
You know, they just don't have the appetite to mm-hmm. do it. I think a lot of it is that certain lobby groups have a hold on them. They don't want stuff like that to pass, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're beholden to the people that have the purse strings. That's usually the biggest cause.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch over to the campaign right now. You've been criticized by your opponent in recent weeks with the development that Todd Smith, a campaign consultant, has been indicted for allegedly being involved in a scheme to sell hemp licenses from the Department of Agriculture. Were you surprised when that happened? And what's kind of your response now?
I wasn't surprised. Todd's innocent, in my opinion. I don't think anything happened. I mean, only an idiot would think you'd have to pay more than $100. I mean, it said in the bill the hemp license was $100 and no more. So it's very suspicious. Of course, this is the Travis County DA. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, they cannot come after me. They used to come after mm-hmm. elected officials, but the legislature took that away from them. They've come after me before. They've come after Rick Perry. They've come after Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Tom DeLay, you name it. So now, since they can't come after the elected officials, they come after people around you. Mm-hmm. Just like they did Donald Trump. They came after Steve Bannon, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Carter Page, General Flynn. It's the same thing. So anyway, it's basically like this. Todd and I parted ways. We talked about it. And it's like, you know, you're the boss, and you find out one of your employees is stealing. So what do? You have to get rid of them. So mm-hmm. that's Todd and I have parted ways. Mm-hmm. It's no reflection on my character. Matter of fact, I have third-party verification about my character. Mm-hmm. In September, before the presidential election, the president's appointments office called me and said, the president of the United States wants to know if you'll take a Senate-approved appointment. Mm-hmm. I said, there's nothing I wouldn't do for the president. By the way, what is it? He said, well, after the election, we're going to make some changes in the cabinet. He wants you to come up and run the USDA. It's a cabinet position. I said, mm-hmm. be glad to do that. They said, but we've got to stand on it because we've got to get you through the FBI background check, which takes about 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed 6 different FBI agents, cleared it all. If there's anything in my background that's unethical or even slightly shady, mm-hmm. my name would have been withdrawn from consideration. So mm-hmm. I feel pretty good about that. Third-party verification. That's not me saying it. That's mm-hmm. the FBI saying, you're good to go.
You said that State Representative James White is a good man that's being used by bad people or something to that effect. What do you mean by that?
I think he was given a false bill of goods that they wanted to run just so they'd have somebody in place if they could get this DA thing, you know, to stick and take hold, but it obviously hasn't. Mm-hmm. I've seen 2 polls, one poll, both opponents are polling in the single digits, and another one, they're in the low teens, mm-hmm. so they really haven't gotten any traction on this, attacking me. People are kind of tired of that anyway.
Mm-hmm. You've been endorsed by President Donald Trump.
I have.
You think that helps in this kind of a race?
In a Republican primary, that's the right. best endorsement you can possibly get, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you talk to the president?
I talked yesterday. Matter of fact, I was contacted and wanted me to come to the rally in Conroe. I was not going. I had a rally in the valley with General Flynn and a fundraiser, but I've changed all that, rescheduled that. I am going to be at the rally in Conroe, and I'll speak before the president comes out on mm-hmm. his behalf.
So with the election just a few weeks away, it's kind of the last question. You know, you've got a couple opponents. What's your strategy heading into these final weeks?
You know, I'm just keep doing what I'm doing. I'm out and about and work. I'm a hard-driving, hard-working, probably hardest driving, hardest working statewide elected official there is. I'm out there. I'm not afraid to go out and debate my opponents. None of the others obviously will do that. They hide, you mm-hmm. know, hide behind their office door. Mm-hmm. But I think the people deserve that. Even if you're 80 points ahead, you still need to get out and the people need to hear from you. So that's kind of the way I've always campaigned.
Well, and if people want to follow your campaign or get involved, where can they go do that?
Mainly, my best communication is Facebook/Miller for Texas. We have about 850,000 followers. This week we had over 20 million people engaged this month.
Wow.
So we're very active on social media.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.